mean, I've had church now. I can go home. You guys can stay if you want, and that's fine. Wow. I'm telling you, we need some kind of app or something where all of us can do that, and we can all access it, like, remotely. Like, I'm going to my job, and, dude, I really need some encouragement. I'm going to pull up the Austin Cathedral app and just, I believe that the Lord has set you today to do exactly what he's called. I'm telling you. So if anybody is an app designer, get on that train. That's, I can promise you no financial return, but your return in heaven will be great. Right? Oh, my goodness. Wow. Whew. So as I was praying and studying and seeking and, you know, all the stuff you do to get ready to speak to people, I was reminded, I have something that I feel like God wants me to share today, which everybody collectively, like, whew, good. I have something that God wants me to share today, but as I was preparing, it just, you know, it reminded me there's just an additional thing. Like, even just this morning, we were in worship practice, and I said, hey, I got to head over to, I mean, I went in the kitchen for just a little bit, sat down and took some notes, because there's just a little bit of additional I just want to tack on to the end of what I'd already planned to say. Because, I mean, it's important when you're at a local church, when you're a part of a body, it's important to hear the word. But it's super-duper important to hear the word as God wants you to apply it, right? Why? Here's the word. There's a lot of word out there, but what? Why is that our word? Why is that being released today? And so I want to tack on to the end just an exhortation and some thoughts and an encouragement about what it is that the Lord has me to share in general. We'll get there. Stick with me, and it'll all be great. Let's see. Let's turn. First of all, let's turn to Romans 8:29. Romans 8:29. In a really strange twist of fate, I am reading out of, no, the NIV today. Isn't that weird? I know. All of your collective minds have been blown right now because I'm reading out of the NIV. Romans 8:29. This is kind of important for us to get, and it was important for me as I was, you know, I've been going on a lot of bike rides lately, and I like bike rides, I like lawn mowing, I like stuff where I'm just, where my body is busy doing something like super repetitive, because then my body's all taken care of. I tend to be a fidgety person anyway. Like, if you're sitting at a table with me, it won't be too long before you'll hear, like, the chair that I'm sitting in will start to go, because my knee is just bouncing up and down. I always have to be fidgeting with something. My body has to be doing something. I think better that way. So when I'm on a bike ride, like a long bike ride, there's the song that we sang this morning actually came on that Breathe On Us. You don't have to tell me if you liked it or not. I maybe rather would not know. So as we were singing Breathe On Us, like, it was just a great experience. I went out on a bike ride, came back an hour later with a song. I think I need to go on more bike rides. That would be a good thing for me, I think. But as I was on this ride, the Lord started speaking to me about worship, which, you know, I thought, God, that's a little on the nose, you know, that I would speak on worship. Can I speak on something else so that shows I have multiple skills? And he said, no. He said, no, I want you to talk about worship. So in talking about worship this morning, we're in Romans 8:29. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Jesus is the firstborn. Jesus is the first, I've mentioned this before, he's the first of a spiritual species of beings, right? There was Jesus is the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. I look at Romans 8:29, and it's a great reminder to me that, yes, I carry DNA. Dale mentioned this last week, actually. I carry DNA from my mom, Josephine Mildred Shaw. She's not here, so I can say her middle name out loud. Josephine Shaw. I carry DNA from my mom, and I carry DNA from my dad, Samuel Dwayne Shaw, right? I've got their DNA and the DNA of all my natural ancestors coursing through my body right here and all those chromosomes, all that stuff going on here. I've got their DNA that makes up what you see and sometimes the way that I act. But Romans 8:29 reminds me that I've also got a whole different plane of existence going on. And so do you. And so all of us that are in Christ, and you know, we're operating on two different planes simultaneously. We have this natural world affected by all the natural stuff that, you know, that is good stuff, right? I got good things from my mom and dad. I got great things from natural experiences that I've had. We oftentimes in church, I think we put this wall up between the things of God and all the things that are in the world. Now, things that are of the world aren't so great, but things that are in the world are here for a reason. Things that are in the world are here so that we can interact with them, we can have effect on them, they can help to challenge us and shape who we are. Just because something is natural, and Dale was alluding to this last week, just because something is natural doesn't mean it's bad, right? We are natural beings. If we were entirely spiritual beings, you wouldn't see me right now. My clothes would be on the floor, and I'd just be just all around. I'm a natural being, and so are you, and I'm thankful for it. I'm glad for it. And when I read Romans 8:29, it reminds me that I must be doing something right as a natural / spiritual being, because that's who Jesus was. The first of a spiritual species, Jesus, fully God and fully man, operating on two different planes of existence. I'm not going to camp out here for too incredibly very long, but I wanted to just, part of what's bringing what I want to share up today is that there's been a lot of what's been happening in the Word over the last month or two has been, you may have heard this word again and again and again, aligning, alignment. Alignment, agreement, alignment and agreement. Pastor has been sharing about aligning our heart with his heart and aligning our hearts with the Word. And when, you know, when we do that, when we align our hearts with his, then we align our will with his will, and we actually become effective for him. A month ago, I was talking about aligning our hearts and aligning our ears to be able to hear the heart of the Word, instead of just reading the letters of the Word, because the letter of the law kills, but the heart and the Spirit of God, that's his intention, that's his motivation, that's why he's speaking the Word. So I was talking a month ago about aligning our ears to hear the heart of the Word. Dale Gentry last week was speaking about embracing and finding that, striking that balance between our natural selves and our supernatural selves. And that was a really powerful message for me. That was really, really good stuff. And about finding that balance, finding that alignment. And so as I was thinking about all this alignment and Romans 8:29 and being, you know, operating on two different spiritual planes, it just occurs to me that the moment that we as Christians are the most intentional, the most purposeful typically about embracing both of those planes is when we're in worship. It's when we're in worship. And we were doing that this morning. We do that every time we come together, Friday night, Sunday morning. We've got natural physical bodies that on a Sunday morning, quite honestly, rather be doing something else than standing and dancing and raising hands and shouting and moving to the front. If your body doesn't particularly want to move to the front at this moment, I'd rather just sit down. But we bring our bodies into alignment with what our spirit is longing for. God's spirit calling to our spirit, drawing us in, and we intentionally say, okay, body, it's time to get moving. Let's do it. I'm going to bring my body into purposeful and intentional alignment with what it is that my spirit is needing to do right now. I'm going to eliminate all the other distractions. I'm going to hone the way that I'm, you know, I'm going to hone the things I'm listening to. I'm going to whittle down the things that my body might want to do, and I'm going to focus, right? And if this doesn't make any sense, then, and you don't focus your body during worship, then I don't know, because I feel like in times of worship, I have to be really, really, really intentional, which gets me into the next thing that I want to talk about here. Actually, I have a video clip. That's the next thing I want to talk about. Don't run it yet. I want to set it up. Because as I'm thinking about operating in two different spiritual planes and the intentionality of how we present ourselves to the Lord in worship, I am reminded of 1981, Chariots of Fire. Anybody ever see Chariots of Fire? Yes. If you haven't seen Chariots of Fire, you should. It's really good. It's the story of, primarily the story of Eric Liddell and Arthur Abraham, two British runners who were training and competing. They competed in the Paris Olympics in 1924. Now, Eric Liddell is a remarkable story. He was born in China. His parents were missionaries. For those of you who don't know, for those of you who do know, tune in a second. So he was born in China. His parents were missionaries. He left China to go to school in England, and then he was educated in college, and I think it was Oxford. And then he felt this strong call to go back to China and to follow in his parents' footsteps. He was born and then eventually died in China. After the Olympics in 1924, he moved back to China in 1925 and lived out the rest of his days there as a missionary in China. So here, there's a clip that comes back to me again and again and again when I'm thinking about the things that we've been talking about lately, about aligning ourselves, about striking this balance between our natural and our supernatural, and really about becoming the fullness of who God has called us to be. Are we ready? Okay, go for it.
I've decided. I'm going back to China. The missionary service have accepted me.
Oh, Eddie. Oh, I'm so pleased.
Well, I've got a lot of running to do first. Jenny, you've got to understand. I believe that God made me for a purpose. For China. But he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. To give it up would be to hold him in contempt. You were right. It's not just fun. To win is to honor him.
So, in case you didn't hear some of that, either the volume was too low or he was Scottish. So, you know, it's like listening to Shrek talk about running. He says, I was accepted, I'm going back to China. And she's very excited and he says, I've got a lot of running to do first. You know, I've got a lot of running to do first. And she's confused about that. Well, you've been called back to go to China. Why do you need to train for the Olympics? And he says, and it's beautiful and brilliant and I think applicable to our lives. He said, Jenny, you have to understand. I believe God made me for a purpose, going to China, being a missionary, fulfilling his calling. But he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. He says, he made me this way. And so to do anything less than pursue it with the fullness of all that I have would be to deny him. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? And so as Dale was speaking last week, and it was sort of fueling this message, Dale was talking about natural giftings and supernatural giftings and how it's God gave you both, and it's okay to embrace and to pursue both. And when I think about Eric Liddell, it reminds me of just, you know, it brings to light for me, like, I know I was created for a purpose. I'm just telling you now, I know I was created for a purpose. A few of them. One of them is that God has purposed me to give his people, whether it's just us as people or anybody else who wants to listen, he's purposed me to give people melodies and lyrics with which they can declare who he is. That's my purpose. That's what I'm supposed to be doing here. The song that we sang this morning, thank you for confirming that God's purpose for me. I didn't miss it. Thank you. I appreciate it. But he's made me to write those songs that I write. Sometimes I do a better job than others, but he's made me to do that. He's made me to take to take lyrics and melody and to give people language and a bridge to connect in song with his spirit. That's what I'm here for. But he also made me enjoy sports, right? And so he also saw to it that I could have a bike, right? And so I don't spend my entire day, every single day, writing songs, or we'd have more songs. I don't spend all my time doing that. He created me for that purpose, but he also gave me a heart of compassion and love and adoration for that lady right there. And for all three of them kids that we made, he gave me them. So to not pursue them with the same passion that I pursue the thing that he purposed me for would be to deny him. Right? So when we're talking about worship, what we're talking about here is a matter of position of heart and intentionality. Getting back into worship. Intentionality. Oh my goodness. So there's a Chris Tomlin song that says, "You and I were made to worship," right? And I truly believe that. God has created us to worship. If it's not God, as you've seen, we'll find something else to worship. We'll lift up whatever we can because there's something in our spiritual DNA that is created to worship. So if it's not God, it'll be something else. So hopefully we can continue to choose for it to be God. But the question isn't even then about whether we're going to worship. The question is whom? It is whom. The question's whom, and the question is how are we going to worship, right? And what I get out of that Eric Liddell line from Chariots of Fire is that to worship with anything less than the fullness of who we are is to do God a little bit of a disservice. And honestly, to not live up to our full calling, right? To worship with anything less. And I'm not talking about, I've got a broken leg, otherwise I would stand, Darren. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in here. To come with anything less than what the fullness of what he's put in our hearts. To come with anything less than that. Every time we come to worship him is to undercut who he's created us to be. And to give him a little bit less than the glory that's due his name. It is so important. Can I say this? That the most, you are at your most effective when you are worshiping. You are at your most connected when you are worshiping. You are at your most beneficial, not only to your own life, but to the environment around you and to the God you serve when you're worshiping. The very best that we can be is who we are when we're in moments of worship. I realize it's a natural thing, but it saddens me sometimes when I see, and I see, it's in me, it's in all of us, it saddens me sometimes when we treat our worship contextually. Sometimes you do it with musical styles. Well, I can't do that because that style of music is not good. I don't like it. I can't do it because I don't like the tone of that singer's voice. I would worship right now, but I'm getting a call. I would worship right now, but this moment is so Instagrammable that I really want everyone else to see it. You know, when we contextualize our worship, I would worship right now, but let's go really quickly because this is the main gist of the message here. Go to Romans 12:1. Romans 12:1. And in the NIV, it says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship." We tend to put this like wall of separation between what our bodies are doing and what our spirits are doing, right? But what we're reading here in Romans is presenting our bodies as a living sacrifice is our spiritual act of worship. I was speaking with Anchor, not last Wednesday, but the Wednesday before, and we were talking a little bit about Mary and Martha. Actually, yeah, let's go to that real quick. Let's go to, where are we? I think it's John 11. John 11. Yeah, John 11, verse 17. There's something really interesting in here that got some of this kicked off for me, and I was thinking about this. We tend to look at Mary and Martha as classic examples of, like, well, somebody is spiritual, and some people just, like, are way too, like, practical. And if you've ever been called a Martha, has anybody even ever been called a Martha? And did it feel good when people were calling you, oh, you're such a Martha? Like, why is that bad? Why is it bad to make the dinner? Why is it bad to, you know, to realize that, oh, the shopping needs to get done? Why is it bad to make sure that the tables are set up? That's not bad. It's not bad at all. It's also not bad to lay at the feet of Jesus. That's good too. But if you take a look at John 11, 17, this is right before Lazarus is raised from the dead. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been dead, been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed home, which seems classic, right? Martha and Mary. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Some people stop there and they think that there's sort of a rebuke of Jesus. If you'd been here, where were you? My brother wouldn't have died. But moving ahead one verse, but I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. So, there's a tremendous faith in Martha. She goes out to get the Lord, to find the Lord, and to say, this horrible thing happened. I have faith that if you had been here, it wouldn't have happened. But I also have faith that if you come here now, it can all get corrected. Because I have that much faith in you. So skip ahead a few verses. 28, after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and she's asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. And when the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and she said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. It seems like a throwaway thing, very inconsequential, but what struck me a couple weeks ago as I was reading this was, when Martha, consider for a moment, just suppose Mary and Martha, I know that they're two separate people, but consider maybe, what if they were one person? What if they're just the two, metaphorically, if we think about Mary and Martha as being the two separate sides of us? Amazing things happen when the two sides of us get into agreement and start speaking the same thing. Amazing things happen. Martha, I got to do this. I got to get the job done. I got to work. And I'm all about action. And blah. When she says, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And I know that God will give you whatever you ask. I have faith in you. That's amazing. But then when the Spirit, I just want to lay around and pour oil on Jesus and just bask in his glory and lay around and let somebody else make dinner. When that side also comes up and says, I know that if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And I know that God will give you whatever you ask. I think it's really cool when we see the two sides, the spiritual, the practical, coming together in alignment, because the very next thing that happens is resurrection. The very next thing that happens is a move of the power of God, and life happens where life wasn't happening before. And as I'm reading this, it connects with me very much as to our state when we're in worship. When we're in those moments of worship, my body is saying, God, I'm going to do whatever it takes to connect with you. My spirit is saying, God, I'm going to do whatever it takes to connect with you. And when those two things come into agreement, lo and behold, I connect with him. It's the weirdest thing. So strange when I focus my body and my spirit on the same thing. Now, the catch here is that I mentioned earlier that we contextualize worship, right? We put things in boxes. Well, I'm going to worship if it's this. I'm not going to worship if it's that. If we're not careful, we will contextualize worship to being the thing that a lot of us are thinking right now, which is the song we sang, the dance we did, the lyrics on the screen, the 40 minutes on a Sunday, the hour on a Friday, and that's worship. But that's not worship, because Romans 12:1 says that worship is a living sacrifice. Worship is how we live our lives. Worship is every moment reminding ourselves, oh, wait, my spirit's not engaged here, but it can be. Let me bring my spirit into agreement with what's happening with my body right now, and then I bet I'll be more aware of his presence. And I bet I'll see God move. My goodness. When we're talking about worship, and if we can think of it from this point forward, when I'm talking about worship, I'm meaning a living sacrifice, the lives that we bring to the Lord. When I think about this enough, I start thinking, oh my gosh, well, God's singing a song all the time. And that song is your life. God is singing a song, and I want it to be the very best song that it can be. He's constantly singing over us. Any of the songs that we sing came from him anyway. All of the worship that we offer to him came from him. And he's saying, hey, sing this. This is the one I really want to hear today. You know, live this. This is the one I really want to see today. That's living worship, living worship. And so when we're talking about worship, in terms of Romans 12:1, therefore I urge you, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. So when we're talking about worship, whether we're singing or living or going to work or eating dinner with our families, all of those have the opportunity for us to be moments of worship. All of them, every single one of them. Living a life, where did it go? It's in, I'm so bad at remembering addresses. In Colossians 3:23 and 24, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Whatever you do, do it with all your heart as working from the Lord. And that's really what it comes down to, is in worship here, when we're musically doing some stuff and there's artistic expressions going on, it's not a question of what are we singing, what's the melody, how fast is the song, is there a banner, is there not a banner, are we dancing or not? None of that is the issue. Pastor's saying this all the time. The issue isn't the issue, right? None of that is the issue. The whole issue in worship is, how is our heart positioned? How is our heart positioned? Because I know, and you know, that we've been in the middle of awesome worship services where lots of people are apparently experiencing a touch from God, but I'm not. You ever been there? It's okay. I've been there. You can be there if, you know, it happens. I've been in amazing worship experiences where people, apparently, the Holy Spirit was there. Like, I didn't even know, because my heart wasn't positioned in a place where I could connect with him. My body was doing all the right stuff. Raise your hands. Okay. And we're going to sing this again. All right. How great is our God? I think how great is it? You know. Now, let's all dance. You know. You know. If you're rolling your eyes and like doing this, then you're probably not in it. You're probably not positioning your heart correctly. But we've all been there in moments of worship. And outside of this artistic expression, we've all been there in our lives more often than not. I'm on my job and they say, hey, we need these reports in by 1. All right. Fine. Cool. Yeah, great. I'll do that too. If you're rolling your eyes and saying, fine, great, I'll do that too, your heart's probably not in it, right? It's positioning of our hearts every moment. Those reports you have to file by 1 can be an act of worship given to the Lord. Joe and I were talking a little bit before service, and I was mentioning a story to him, very brief story. When you determine more often than not to live your life in such a way that God is glorified and that your heart is positioned before him, it's work, I know. It's work, because people make it hard to position your heart always the right way before God. People are challenging, but you know that challenge causes us to grow. It's every day is an opportunity to continue to do this. Just a quick thing that this still floors me. There was a coworker that I was working with at high school. I was teaching at Hayes High School for 8 years, and a person that I've been working with for 7 years, who was not a believer, but had someone who was special to them who wanted to start beginning to go to church. So that person came to ask me some questions. This was 7 years into our relationship. I had beaten myself up a little bit over those 7 years, thinking, man, I should really be preaching more here in this workplace. Have you ever done that? I should really be, I wish I had tracks. I wish people liked that, you know? I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. Lord, I'm so sorry. You ever go to your workplace sorry to God that you're not better? It's the worst feeling in the world. But along with that, as we're positioning our hearts before God and saying, because more often than not, I would go into work saying, God, just, you know, let me see this as you see it today. Let me see, because when you're dealing with teenagers, you got to do that all day long. You've got to say, Lord, let me see every student that I have the way that you see them, or I will kill one or two. Just, and but then I can have a prison ministry, so that would be cool, you know? But, so more often than not, I would go into work saying, Lord, give me your eyes, give me, just let, when I'm doing this thing you've called me to do, oh, I'm getting to this in a second, and then I'll close. When we're doing the thing that he's called us to do, we need to be positioning our heart and inviting him into that thing that he's called us to do. And so, working with this person for 7 years, about shortly before working for the eighth year, this person comes to me and says, I need to ask you some questions about church and about God and about, because I've been away from that for so long. I don't know. So what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Midway through our conversation, which I thought, man, this is really cool. I said, so I'm just curious. Like, we've never had a conversation about this stuff before. So why are you coming to me now? And my coworker said, well, I mean, honestly, I've never known personally a Christian who's a nice person. So I figured I could come to you. I know, wow, right? You never know the influence that you have, those acts of worship that you do just by living your life. The Bible said, if I'll be lifted up, I'll draw all people unto me. And that should be our focus, not only in here, but out there. We should actually not even term things in here and out there. We should just say that should be our focus, period. Aside from context, aside from geography, aside from circumstance, the positioning of my heart so that it's an attitude of worship should be my default. And that way, everything that I do becomes an act of worship to our God, something that brings him praise, something that brings him glory, something that brings him honor. Yes, I know I'm created for a purpose. I'm created to write songs so that people can worship, but I also just really like people, and God made me that way. And if I choose not to do any of those things to the best of my ability, then I'm denying who he made me to be. Because he made me to be that really nice person who's in a workplace and someone says, hey, they're a Christian and a nice person. Maybe God's not so bad. And for me, that's a huge win. That's a huge win when so many people are told so many negative and bad things about God. Huge for me that somebody would say, hey, you're a nice person. Maybe I'll give God a chance. Woo, my goodness. Wow. So, I'm talking about, in case you were wondering, I'm talking about the positioning of our hearts, our spirits and our bodies being aligned, our spirits being aligned with our lives. Something that we were mentioning in Anchor 2 weeks ago, because it was a good question. You know, how do you do that? How do you do that? I get it, spirit, body working together. I get it. How do you do that? I can't tell you how everybody might do it, but I can tell you how I do it. I just continually invite God. I continually, and I know that a lot of us do, right? That's how many of you, your default morning thing is, Lord, I need you today. I invite you into my day, right? For a lot of us, that's it. But if we are not careful, that becomes just something that we say every morning out of habit, and it does, it's what I do when I brush my teeth. And if we don't have, once again, the positioning of our heart and the attitude and the focus of our spirit in that, then it becomes words that just fall off, and it's something we do to fill that 30 seconds in our day. But what I mean, a huge go-to for me is, God, the places that you've called me to be today, I want to see this as you see it. I want to hear what you're speaking to me in that environment. I want to be useful for you today, God. So I want to be there in my body, but I also want to be there in my spirit. I want to be fully present in the place that you've called me to be. And that is a really huge part of this. Because wherever you go, if you've got something on your schedule that you need to do this week, God's not surprised by that. He knew that you were going to be there. He knew that that appointment was going to be made. Before any of this stuff ever happened in our historical timeline, God knew you were going to be sitting here today. And if he knew, then he also knows that he's got something that we need to hear from him in this moment. He's got something that he wants to speak to us in this moment. If you've got an appointment coming up this week, you've got a client, you've got a sales call, you've got a repair job you need to get done, you've got a class you're going to, God knew that you were there. God knew you were going to be there. And it's our responsibility to invite him into those places that he's already called us to be. God, I know that you've called me to be at such and such a place at such and such a time. So, Lord, I invite your presence into that place. I mean, do it proactively. Do it before you have to go. Wait till the moment. God, on Tuesday, I pray that you're there. And I just know, God, that I'm going to hear the things that you're speaking to me. I'm going to be fully present in the spirit and in the natural with you there. It's not about who we worship, because we're going to worship. I'm sorry. It's not about whether we worship, because we're going to worship anyway. It is about how we worship, and how we worship, not as much, you know, what we're doing with our, you know, like in a musical context, what we're doing with our bodies, whether we've got a good voice or a bad voice, whether we can play an instrument or not, whether we like flags or don't like flags, any of that stuff. It's not about any of that. It's about proper positioning of heart. It's about, where is my heart when I'm worshiping? And if worship is my life, where is my heart when I'm living? Where's my heart when I'm living this life? Right? Because if we can't, close with this because it's about time. When Eric Liddell, I said it's about time, that's kind of arbitrary. I don't actually know that it's about time. I don't know. We don't have a set end time, but here we go. So when Eric Liddell is speaking about running, he says, and I think it's just so beautiful, he says, I have a purpose, but God also made me fast. And when I run, I can feel his pleasure. So to run, for him to run as anything less than an act of worship would be false. To do what God made him to do and designed him to do with anything less than the heart that he would put into worshiping, studying the word, praying, would be a counterfeit, right? And wow, what a prescription for living a life from this day forward. Now, the reason that I mentioned that I was going to tack on a little bit that the Lord was showing me, just specifically about, or telling me specifically about us. Over the years, I've shared a lot of messages. I've had opportunity to speak a lot. And most of those messages have been in some way, shape, or form about worship. In part, I think, because, you know, that's the position that I have here. But like Todd was when Todd was speaking and blessing the word just a little bit ago, he referenced that this is a word for all of you who are here in this room today. And I believe it's a word for our church about worship and about the positioning of our heart and about not only worshiping in music in the way that we've sort of compartmentalized worship to be, but treating worship as our bodies, a living sacrifice. I think that part of the reason why I end up talking about worship so much is because that is a big part of who we are as a church, and it's a big part of our destiny and where we're going as a church. God has, you know, in the foyer, there's a lot of words that have been spoken over our church. When we worship, we come into agreement with God's will for this realm, right? When we enthrone, I've mentioned this a lot. There are a lot of great worship songs that talk about how I feel about God. There's a lot of those are wonderful. They're beautiful. I sing them when I'm by myself. There's nothing wrong with any song that talks about, but here you may notice we do a little different. Most of the songs that we sing are songs that are declaring not how I feel about you, but who he is. Most of the songs that we sing are declaring either we're getting out there in declaration, this is who my God is, this is what he does, this is with these big declarations, or we're responding to who he's created us to be in him. God, this is who we are because you said it, right? I know that there's room and there's worth and value in expressing more intimately our feelings of love for the Lord, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the things that we tend to sing are directly tied to who we are as a church. And we're a church that is here to establish something new upon the earth. We're here to establish, like, your kingdom come, your will be done. That's not just because it rhymes and we can sing it with a lot of different melodies. That's because we're in agreement with you, God. Your kingdom be established here upon this earth. Everything that you desire in heaven, we desire here on earth, and we are going to declare it aloud and get into agreement with heaven so we can see you do it. I'm mentioning this today about offering our bodies as a living sacrifice because if we are to affect this earth that he's called us to, he's called us all to be living here in this city at this time in history. Those declarations that we sing here, if we relegate worship to just the 40 minutes we spend on a Sunday and the hour that we spend on a Friday, and it stays here, then it stays here. And I don't know about you, but I don't see the multitudes coming in to join us to sing it. I see us, and I love us, but if we are to take the things that he's declaring here, if we are to take the kind of passionate, heartfelt position, Father, do whatever it is you want to do in this earth. If we're going to take the passion that we put into worship, if we're going to affect the world, we've got to take that same passion that's in our worship, and we've got to infuse it into our daily lives. Because you all have a circle of influence that I don't have. I actually have it easier than everybody else. This is my circle of influence directly. I've got other places that I go, other things that I do, and like us all, I try to make sure that, Lord, I'm going to position my heart so that I can be effective for you. But my primary circle is right here, and you guys already like me. And I can say things like, hey, let's sing this. And you're like, okay. My job is actually, it's easy in that sense. But anyway, I won't go on a, anyway. But if we relegate worship and the heart that we have for worship and the style and the things that we're declaring in worship, if we relegate that here and then we don't take it and infuse it into our daily lives, then what happens here doesn't end up changing the world. What happens here ends up staying in these four walls because we need to be living epistles of what's happening right here. If God deposits something in our spirit here, we need to take it out there. if God is God is revealing to us, hey, the position of our heart needs to be turned towards him, because the same thing that fuels my purpose needs to be the thing that fuels my passions. The same thing that fuels my purpose needs to be the same thing that fuels my everyday work, my everyday relationships. I need to have that same fuel. It's the Spirit of God. It's the power of the Holy Spirit going through me that fuels these times of worship. And it needs to be the same thing that fuels my getting gas at the Sam's or whatever. The same thing that I get gas at Sam's. It needs to be the same thing that fuels my going to the grocery store. It needs to be the same thing that fuels my, you know, meeting people for coffee or whatever it is that I'm doing, right? Amen. So here's what I'd like for us to do. Because I was just saying that worship is so much more than the songs that we sing. So for a weird thing, I don't know if anybody's going to be confirming the word or whatever. You know, if we do that, that's great. But after we confirm the word, I'd like for us to live this out just a little bit. We normally close in a song, but worship is so much more than a song that I'd really like for us to close in a different way. I'd like for us to close in each of us going and making a connection with somebody else. Each of us being a living example of the passion and the heart that God has for us. Each of us going and giving somebody a hug, shaking hands. If there's somebody you don't know, tell them hello, meet them. We're all in this together. We're called to a very unique and a very special place with a very unique purpose. We should know each other. So instead of closing in a song, what I'd like to do is I'd like for us to close in a time just of fellowship and giving people a hug, high-fiving them, blessing them, because everybody's about to go into a week and everybody's got to carry this heart into their weeks. We've all got to do that. So let's build each other up before we send each other out. Cool? Amen. And that's all I got. Go.